Coming up next on This Week in Computer Hardware, the iPhone was Intel powered, almost. US-made Macs, Router Ranker, Haswell Ready, PSUs, NVIDIA's Shield has a ship date, and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 218, recorded May 16th, 2013. A new age for Intel. Brought to you by Manpacks, manly goods on a schedule. Get started today and have underwear, socks, toiletries, shaving supplies, and more delivered right to your door. Visit manpacks.com/twit and get $10 off your first order of $30 or more, or buy a $50 gift card for $40. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, the Twit podcast that aims to bring you the most important, useful, friendly, fun, and, well, mostly useful news in computer hardware, tablet updates, and, of course, even a little cell phone action once in a while. Our beloved Ryan Shrout is weeping, I understand, somewhere in LAX, which is a natural state of being in LA, or in the airport at LA to be more exact. He arranged for PC Purse Josh Walworth to sit in. Welcome, Josh. How you doing, man?
Well, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. What's got you excited today? I was giggling. I was like, oh, Asus P5A did a hardware flashback today. And I was like, I remember those motherboards. They were shiny.
They were shiny. Yeah, those are the first 100 megahertz capable frontside bus boards for AMD. The K62 was still kind of king of the heap for that company before the Athlon K7 rolled around. But I always remember that board being kind of the favored one of many overclockers. It seemed to do really, really well. It could go up to 120 megahertz frontside bus. At least some samples could. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a kick in the pants to think back on overclocking with jumpers instead of going into BIOS.
Somehow, so primitive. I don't miss the jumpers. I don't miss them at all.
Yeah, it was a lot more trial and error back in those days. And when you have a 2.2 volt CPU in there and you accidentally supply 3.3 volts to it, it usually wasn't pretty.
Could be worse. I also remember the days of seeing how many different ways I could chip the surface of an AMD processor and render it useless. I have three that I promise to turn into a band for a cowboy hat at some point.
Yeah, those were a little fragile if you didn't put the heatsink. I'd never done that myself. I think the worst that I'd ever done with hardware is Tyan sent me one of their dual processor boards, and I had a screwdriver, and I was putting on the heatsink, and it slipped, and it just destroyed the traces to the memory, never booted up that board again, and it was an expensive piece of equipment.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, I still don't use the little cable to ground myself to the motherboard, but I move really slowly with processors to this very day as a result.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So we should talk Paul Otellini's last day at Intel today, which I stumbled across, of all places, at The Atlantic, which normally The Atlantic is writing big, deep reporting about social issues, but it was kind of a trip. Paul Otellini's Intel, can the company that built the future survive it? And I wanted to call this out because, we've been talking a lot about the survival of AMD, the survival of NVIDIA, what's going on with the industry, where is the computer going? And it's what I didn't realize until I read this article was so Intel's 45 years old. Otellini's actually been there for 40 of 45 years. He spent the last 80 years as the chief executive officer. And his detractors are like, the guys on Wall Street are like, Intel is yet to make inroads in mobile processing that would contribute significant margins to the bottom line. You know, the kind of horrible fluff you hear from analysts talking about, what Wall Street wants. And I never realized this is a quote: Intel generated more revenue during his 8-year tenure as CEO than it did during the rest of the company's 45-year history, which sounds insane until you look at the graph and you start looking at the amount of money that was coming in, the revenue, which is already hitting $30 billion by like 2000 and then jacks up to like 66. I was told, I think it says in there, where did it go? Aha. He made $66 billion in profit net income compared to the $68 billion posted by his predecessors. $11 billion in 2012. A lot of money. I mean, a lot of money, a lot of success. Also, a really huge head start over almost every processor manufacturer in the industry. I was kind of like,
yeah, certainly with since 2005 and 2006 when the Core 2 series came out, the margins at Intel just blossomed. I mean, we're talking 60 to 65%. And if you go anyplace else in the semiconductor industry, people are pretty happy with 30 to 35. And you know, NVIDIA was ecstatic about, you know, breaking 40% of margins on their products, you know, some quarters back. And so, yeah, Paul has done some seriously clean living in the past 7 years that has, you know, put Intel. And certainly it hasn't hurt that AMD has stumbled so very badly since the release of the Athlon 64 and the original Opteron. I mean, we had the Barcelona, the Phenom chips. Those were kind of disastrous. And, you know, all kinds of missteps. They're finally getting their stuff back together again. But, yeah, when you own your own fabs and you work them the way you do, I mean, the margins are just tremendous for that company. And they stay 12 to 18 months ahead of the rest of the pack when it comes to process technology. Only now are we starting to see some process nodes getting opened up to testing that are in the 22, 20 nanometer range. But still, they're the first to do the mass-produced 22 nanometer 3D Trigate. Other people like to call them FinFETs. So, yeah, good living if you're a shareholder. But not so much if you're a Wall Street analyst. I don't understand what they want more of.
I don't remember. I think it was maybe Microsoft or somebody. I just remember being like when I was first working for one of the magazines at Windows Sources about 1,000 years ago. And I remember somebody was like, you know, it's earnings day because they were at Ziff Davis. They were doing the business side of things, you know, and we were talking later on. It's like, you know, the analysts wanted the stock to hit like 12. The stock hit 13, and then, or the earnings were like 13, and then the stock dropped like in price because apparently they were supposed to hit the analyst estimates but not exceed the analyst estimates. And I'm like, wait, they made more money than you thought they would, but you're punishing them because the stock price is dropping. And I remember being like, I don't get it. I should say the other thing that was kind of crazy about that story is Ottolini apparently, and I had never heard this before, in this interview, he says, quote, we ended up not winning it or passing on it, depending on how you want to view it. And the world would have been a lot different if we'd done it. Ottolini told the reporter from The Atlantic in a conversation they had. The thing he's talking about is the iPhone. Ottolini says, you have to remember this is before the iPhone was introduced. No one knew what the iPhone would do. At the end of the day, there was a chip that they were interested in that they wanted to pay a certain price for and not a nickel more. And that price was below our forecasted cost. I couldn't see it. It wasn't one of those things you can make up on volume. And in hindsight, the forecasted cost was wrong and the volume was 100 times what anybody thought. I just couldn't believe I had never in my wildest dreams imagined that Intel was in the running for the original iPhone.
I hadn't realized that until today. I mean, especially since, I mean, Apple did make a big shift when they went away from PowerPC and started to, you know, buy chips and chipsets from Intel. And certainly that helped Apple have a better overall product because if you remember back in the PowerPC days, they tried to develop their own AGP chipset. There have always been problems with that. I mean, I/O stuff is tough to build. Well, you can just look at VIA, Opti, all these other chipset makers who kind of just, you know, gone to the wayside. But yeah, that would have been huge. And not only that, but Intel is trying to scrape back into the mobile market now. They announced their, what, Silvermont? the new Atom architecture.
Crawl. Bay, yeah, beat,
I mean, they're going to do well just because they have process advantages. And, you know, when you've got that many engineers who can hand place transistors, you know, hand place trace and route, you're going to have products that will exceed the performance and, you know, better energy consumption than people who do, you know, the more software-based EDA type trace and place and route.
it's going to be interesting to see how that evolves. I thought also it was kind of funny talking about Intel and Apple. I was kind of shocked. Tim Cook, another article that came up in Engadget today. Tim Cook says U.S.-made Mac will be a new model in an existing family. And it's been interesting to hear people talk about the fact the labor isn't really what keeps the manufacturer of a lot of cell phones and consumer electronics out of the U.S., but the entire infrastructure that has been set up in China, especially in the Shenzhen province, and how extraordinary it is to basically have all these principal suppliers and this incredible labor pool that can turn around and, say, completely reconfigure production line in 24 hours for a major change, like it happened, I believe, with the iPad 2. And Engadget pointed that Intel was not, or excuse me, I should say, Tim Cook was not revealing all of his cards quite yet. And it was an interview in Politico, of all places. But it will be American-made, in an existing family, and, quote, won't just be a collection of parts shipped from overseas, as multiple pieces will come from Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Kentucky, and Texas. Which, you know, if I'm pretty sure that means it's not all Intel parts. Like, it's not just the Intel parts that are coming from the United States.
Wonder if Utah and Idaho have anything to do with that. That's Micron. the Intel Micron connection. Anyway.
Yeah. No, it was interesting. It's going to be interesting also in part because this is kind of a political defensive gesture to kind of distract attention from the fact that Apple, like many large companies, are burying billions of dollars offshore where they don't get taxed on it, doing clever and legal accounting maneuvering.
Yeah, and I mean, they've only got, what, $96 billion in the bank that they can throw at this pet project, make politicians happy.
Oh my goodness. I'd like to see more jobs in the United States. I think it's probably the short and simple response on that one.
One last thing in that. Do you think part of that is not just the suppliers, but also environmental and government type red tape to making any kind of high-tech manufacturing that, you know, even though we've gotten away from lead, a lot of the bad phenols, I think, in the PCBs. Do you think that's another big stumbling block, or is it kind of overrated and depends on what state you move to?
I think a lot of it depends on what state you move to. Manufacturing in Texas and Nevada is certainly a little less fraught than manufacturing in California, for example. It's kind of funny, my wife is a librarian and worked for the EPA for a while. And the project she worked on was essentially the gathering of information to figure out whether or not a particular piece of land was going to become a Superfund cleanup site. And when you're house hunting and you start realizing how many Superfund cleanup sites are in relatively residential neighborhoods, it starts really impacting how you think about the environmental impact of manufacturing. For the most part, I think no, but certainly – I find it difficult to believe that Foxconn could manufacture things as cheaply in the United States as they could in China, you know, because they probably have, as far as you know, they have considerably less stringent environmental regulations. They worry less about what they leak into the air. And that's an interesting question because, you know, if you're running into somebody who's got benzene in their water supply because somebody wasn't very careful about an 80,000-gallon supply of aviation fuel, you get a little frustrated.
Or you're bottling Perrier.
Yeah, that would be bad.
You know, and another thing, when boards, you know, like this mm-hmm. came out, the Shenzhen province, where a lot of the stuff was made, they were paying their workers $50 a month.
Yeah.
And, you know, providing – housing and food as well, but yeah, $50 a month.
It's frightening. And what frightens me even more is when you hear people familiar with industrial manufacturing on that scale say, well, actually you can move the jobs to the United States and it really wouldn't cost that much more to produce it. I'm just kind of like, you know, and you think about how low the wages are, and then it's like, okay, so you're going to, you know, even above minimum wage is still going to add a huge cost to the price compared to the physical parts cost. So the assembling is so such a modest part of it. I mean, it's you know, obviously we gave up a lot of the industrial manufacturing base in the 70s, and it's going to be interesting to see how much of it we can ever get back. Oh, my goodness. On a more chipper note, something new from a small net builder. I'm a huge fan of small net builders' review of consumer small business routing, basically networking hardware. It's one of the last places you can find anybody doing really serious analysis of, you know, routers and NAS boxes and just really getting deep into the stuff that builds a home network. They just put together something new, the Router Ranker. They've always made their benchmarks pretty accessible on the website, so you can go through and kind of do your own level of research and take a look at how their tests perform compared to your environment you're working in. But it was interesting to take a look at this because we get a lot of people looking for better performance off the router, and they did an interesting thing where they're talking about selecting the router class. Because and if you click on the link there, it's order from Chaos Small Net Builders classification system for Wi-Fi products. And I feel for Tim Higgins and the crew over there because they're trying to look at the horrible mess of, not exactly nomenclature, but just random naming for routers and sort of random claiming of technologies and performances and try to resolve that into something manageable. So, they're basically coming up with, like, for example, the N900 is the 2.4 gigahertz N radio maximum link rate, combined with the 5 gigahertz AC radio rate. If I'm reading it correctly, AC750 is like 450 megabits per second combined with the 1300 megabits per second maximum link rate of 5 gigahertz radio on the AC band, or I should say the AC Wi-Fi spec. Interesting to look at. If you want to nerd out on benchmarks, especially around the AC stuff, this is one of the only places you're going to find a bunch of it. Are you running, just out of curiosity, are you running G or N or AC at home?
N600, I believe. It's one of those Netgear models. I think it's like Netgear N600. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, the nomenclature is so original. It's unlike Gigabyte, who does 15 letters and numbers with any kind of stinking motherboard that they make. Right. But yeah, I'm running an N here. Been happy with it.
Yeah, I think Western Digital follows that nomenclature. Let's see, where is it? The Western Digital WDBWNJ00000NBL MyNet AC1300 HD dual band router just rolls off the tongue.
Yes, I think a marketing person accidentally vomited on their keyboard when they created that product.
Oh my goodness. Haswell motherboards coming out. What's going on with the Asus Z87 motherboards?
They're colorful. Now we've got the usual red and black, and they're introducing gold. So we're getting more and more bling.
Is the gold going to be more expensive than the Republic of Gamers from Asus?
I have not actually read over that. I just laughed at the pictures.
They are shiny motherboards.
They are shiny, and people like shiny things. Z87 is going to be, a little bit of a kick up. Obviously, an improvement from Z77. I can't remember all the exact specs, but I'm hoping they're going to have a serious number of SATA 6 connections rather than Z77, which you were limited to two. They were really fast, but you only had two, as compared to AMD, who had slightly slower. And with the A85X, you got 8 SATA 6 ports.
I was laughing. If you scroll down to the Asus Maximum 6 Hero, and then all the way down to the Sabertooth Z87, the tough motherboards.
That is one tough motherboard.
Obviously we have these sort of, aluminum, textured aluminum off of the back of a Jeep aesthetic meets a motherboard. And I like the fact that they have special covers in place for the PCI Express ports, should you find exposed PCI Express ports to be offensive to your personal aesthetic.
And they even got little covers for the slots. Some people, originally gave Sabertooth a pretty bad name because they didn't adequately cool that. So they'd put that cover on. They didn't put the fan in there. And their boards would just bake.
Right.
Unstable pieces of crap. So finally people, finally figured out, that little thing that I take out and put a little fan in, that's important.
Oh, my goodness. Did you – sorry?
I like the Sabertooth stuff. I'm running one of the 990FX based units, and yeah, they're solid. And for what you get, the price isn't too bad. You still pay a bit of a premium for Asus as compared to MSI, Gigabyte, all those other guys. I mean, they're pretty proud of their products. But I mean, you know, they've got the name.
Probably bigger Haswell news. Corsair and Seasonic have info on Haswell ready PSUs, and I'm kind of feeling nostalgic here because it's been years since I've looked at a potential motherboard upgrade and not been able to take my power supply along with me.
Yes, the new power supplies because you know energy efficiency is the big thing that everybody wants. Whether it goes into a laptop, whether it's in a desktop, they want to keep the power down as much as possible. And Intel has really taken this to kind of another level. Used to be when kind of your computer was in sleep mode, you'd pull 0.5 amps. And that's not, you know, that's not very many amps. You can't arc weld with it. but they have a new sleep state that pulls 0.05 amps. And when you're talking about a motherboard, not a motherboard, but a power supply that can push 1,300 watts and a good 90 amps, being able to do that effectively and then also deliver 0.05 amps, it's a little bit tough to do. And so a lot of power supply guys are scrambling to make that, and Corsair usually does a pretty good job. I mean, they don't make their own power supplies, but they do spec them out. They do some of the basic designs. They've you know kind of optimized other designs on the market that are sold in mass. I can't remember there's like three or four power supply designers and makers, and then they license these products out to others. And again, you know, Corsair is one of those guys that licenses from multiple companies, but they do a very good job of speccing out their products, and the quality control seems good. We're going to see a bunch more power supply guys come out with, you know, more Haswell ready that can can support this lower sleep state. Otherwise, it's just not going to. I mean, it's going to try to go into that sleep state, and it's just not going to work correctly.
I think the general consensus, Ryan was saying last week, was that motherboard manufacturers are probably going to disable this sleep state unless you can verify that your motherboard can actually supply. I want to call it a lack of voltage at this point because there's such a ridiculously small amount of electricity.
Amount of amps, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, an order of magnitude. You know what I mean? Like a half an amp, you can charge an iPhone. You can run a flashlight. You can run an iPod. 500th of an amp. They're literally just keeping some gates ready on the CPU. I mean, it's kind of a phenomenal accomplishment.
Yeah. Need engineering, but I don't want to do that. I'm just, even though you can't spell beer without a double E, it's still not something I want to aspire to.
Yeah, my cousin showed me a differential equations book when he was at Rolla, and that was pretty much the moment I knew that I was never going to be a electrical engineer. Haswell laptop specs. NEC's Levee L to launch in Japan. Scott wrote this up for PC Per. Quote, while we are not sure when it will be released or whether it will be available for North America, we have found a Haswell laptop, a rare thing. Actually, NEC will release two products in this lineup, a high-end 1080p unit and a lower-end 768 model. Unfortunately, the article is in Japanese. NEC's primarily known, if you remember NEC, I do, they're primarily known at this point as a monitor manufacturer. And unfortunately, pc.watch.impress.co.jp is very much in Japanese. And if I translate it, I get the kind of glorious stuff out of Chrome. Like 14 NEC Personal Computer Corporation flagship notebook PC that significant changes to the design. A built-in fourth-generation core processor known in the development code name of Haswell. Actually, this is better than the usual translation gibberish. But like 802.11ac... the Levee L is the name, 15.6-inch LCD, touch-enabled on all models. And one of my favorite lines in a long time, I adopt a Super Shine View LED EX2 IPS LCD.
I'm not entirely sure what that means, but I like it.
I know. It's got contrast, triad, and vividness of 2 times faster ratio, the improvement of the viewing angle.
You've got to sanitize your hands and wear white gloves whenever you type on this damn thing, because do you see that finish?
It's shiny. Yeah,
it's shiny.
I asked one of the product managers at HP once why everything they produce was had a shiny black surface, and he said it was really simple. Shiny black surfaces test really well in focus groups. He's like, everybody gets really frustrated with fingerprints on stuff, but when we focus group stuff out, the shiny surfaces seem to do really well, or did into the last couple of years when they started experimenting with texture and color options. But yeah, you're talking about, it's kind of nice. Like, so with the Haswell notebooks, you're finally looking at the Haswell Ultrabooks. You're finally looking at like 8 gigabytes of memory. Looks like these are going to offer a hybrid system with 32 gig SSDs for caching, Bluetooth 4.0, 802.11.
How do you like that BDXL? That's like a 5-layer Blu-ray disk, 100 to 128 gigs.
Yeah, I used to work, I used to write about bands, one of my first jobs writing for a living, and there was a sort of a code that people use, especially certain PR people, which was, they're big in Japan.
Yeah.
Certain bands and certain technologies have found a home in Japan that never quite make it anywhere else. Oh my!
Only $1,900.
Yeah, which,
that's a little bit of a sticker shock for us here. When you consider that most people look at a $400 to $500 laptop for most of their usage models, and yeah. I mean, you can get still a an i5 with HD 4000 or one of the AMD Trinity based mobile chips for the $500 to $600 range. Nice ultrabook for $650, touch enabled for $750, and then you're looking at something like this that's $1,900.
Well, we'll see if we'll never see it sold in the United States. Yeah. And two, I'm actually kind of curious to see when the Haswell notebooks finally show up or Haswell laptops finally show up, what the pricing is going to be like. Because that was one of the big rumors, is that there's just going to be a whole fleet of MacBooks coming out this summer. I wait with bated breath. And you, ladies and gentlemen, want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Manpack. Should be waiting with bated breath for a Manpack. You're a dude. You forget the basic stuff you need, the stuff you forget to buy until it's too late. Like when you're on the airplane and you realize that you have no shaving cream, or you have that one raggedy razor that's been sitting by the sink for the last couple weeks. Finding good products takes time. Decent underwear and socks, natural shaving creams. Have you stared at the supermarket at the 23 different variations on razors? There's the green ones, the blue ones, the black ones. There's one now with 5 blades. Five. That's about 4 blades too many where I grew up. You need these things every day, but spending time shopping for them is a pain. You want to spend time with your kids or your girlfriend, or work is in crush mode and you're dropping 80-hour weeks. You want to clean some laundry, play some video games, pass out, and not hang out in the, well, in the drugstore staring at razors with 5 blades. You, ladies and gentlemen, need Man Packs. It's a start it, stop it, change it anytime subscription for all your basic essentials. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Mr. Leo Laporte, a subscriber of Man Pack, along with thousands of others. It's easy to manage your account. They remind you before shipment, so there's no surprises, so you don't get underwear for the third row in a month. It's pretty cool. Actually, I'm getting a trickle supply of boxers through Man Packs, my beloved ex officio boxers that actually fit me and don't make me weep, and razor updates, because apparently I find shopping for razors to be a wicked ripping pain in the ass. You order what you want. There's actually a huge list: T-shirts, socks, underwear, razors, shaving cream, just a lot of obviously man-oriented gear there, although, the ladies want to wear boxer shorts, by all means, order away. It's pretty cool. Order what you want. Update your next pack when you need something. Or just wait for it to come every 3 months. Every product is, quote, tried and guy approved by Man Packs. No duds, no junks, just pure win, they say. Free shipping, free returns, easy account management, a no BS return policy. And, quote, at Man Packs, the customer is always king. They want you to be happy. They want you to stay subscribed. They want you to have good gear. The founder says, we put customers first because we want customers for life, an approach I would like to see a lot more in customer service. Something I was thinking about earlier today when I was in a retail outlet looking for a headset. There are two exclusive offers for Twit listeners from Manpax. Go to manpax.com/twit, $10 off your first order of $30 or more, or buy a $50 gift card for $40. Go to manpax.com/twit. Get started today. And we want to thank Manpax for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. And one more time, two exclusive offers. All you got to do is go to manpax.com/twit and get your gear on, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, and oh, they don't even staple the condoms to the receipt.
Oh my goodness. Flashing back to the second least comfortable conversation I ever had with my mother.
You don't like talking about these things with me?
Oh no, with you I'm good.
Oh,
it was with my mom that was a little, excuse me,
sketchy.
I should be worried about what? Mom, what are you saying? Oh my goodness. No surprise, or actually kind of a pleasant surprise, NVIDIA is making money. But the big news this week, other than the quarterly report where NVIDIA told basically NVIDIA's giving money back to shareholders, which is a big deal for a GPU manufacturer. But the big news is NVIDIA announces the Shield pricing and that they're taking pre-orders. Josh, have you pre-ordered a Shield? Do you find a Shield full of wind?
No, I need some new tires, and plus my wife just wrecked our car today. So, Shield is out. It's out. But I don't know if I was ever really going to get one because I don't do a whole lot of Android gaming. If you kind of look at the specs of the Shield, it kind of has a lot of the same stuff as what you would expect from a Galaxy S3 is still around $500. One of the S4s is $700 that you can, if you buy directly without a contract. And so with a product that not only is, you get a smaller screen, it's 720p, mm-hmm. but it's touch enabled. And you've got a sound system in there. You got a pretty decent controller. And the internals themselves are all really good. I mean, it's got plenty of memory, plenty of space, expandability in terms of micro SD. I think it's a plug-in USB port as well.
Right.
And then you've got the streaming technology that if you have a GeForce, 600 or 700-based card in your machine, mm-hmm. you can try their streaming technology and be able to stream Steam games. I think that right now is there's a handful of Steam games that currently support it. And so you can sit on your couch and play PC games through your Shield. And so, it's an interesting product. And when you kind of look at the bill of materials, the price isn't that bad because I think it's rather, I don't think they're making a huge amount of margin off of this. I think they're hoping to have more software support and be able to make money that way. And whether or not they license something, I have no idea. I mean, it's going to be running, Jelly Bean?
I want to say,
Yeah. What do you think about it?
I remember, as waiting in line with Ryan and my partner in crime, Roger Chang, Robert Hare was there, Veronica Belmont was there, and we were all like, what's NVIDIA going to announce? And I got to say, the last possible thing I expected was a half monitor, because I'm staring at the picture. Every time I see this thing, I just stare at it. I'm like, it's a phone, it's a tablet, it's a controller. And it's kind of like the Ouya where I keep coming back to, can I do this with my phone? Well, you can't stream games that are rendered by your NVIDIA GPU. And I'm like, well, if I want to stream games rendered by my NVIDIA GPU, I'm going to do it on my home theater, or I'm going to do it on my PC. I think it was one of those things where NVIDIA went, we could build this and have almost the same lack of success that companies like Sony and NVIDIA that don't have our incredibly entrenched relationship with the gaming community. You know what I mean? Like if NVIDIA and Sony are getting smacked down on handheld handheld gaming devices. I'm sorry, Nintendo, you're absolutely correct. Yeah. Nintendo. Who did I say?
NVIDIA. NVIDIA. So you're being redundant.
Yeah, sorry.
NVIDIA hopes to not replicate the lack of success from NVIDIA.
Yes. And they also hope their condoms aren't stapled to the receipt.
Exactly.
Oh my – yeah, I just remember thinking like – so it was just literally like Nintendo and Sony are getting their ass kicked with their latest portable gaming devices. I think in no small part because a lot of people who do portable gaming are doing it on cell phones now, or smartphones if you want to call them that. And I just remember being like, I just, you know, I still to this point, I look at it and I'm like, okay, who's going to buy this? And,
Go ahead. I'm curious about is what kind of accessories they're going to eventually sell. Now, say you buy this $350 piece of equipment and you're just playing games. Well, what if you can buy a $10 keyboard that you can plug into it and you can have kind of, you know, you've got a touch screen already playing your game and it's like, oh, let me type out an email to somebody. And do you think that's a possibility or is that just doesn't fit well with the form factor?
I just think, you know, $350 and two new consoles come in and there's new smartphones every 3 months, just like clockwork. I think it's going to be a tough sell for NVIDIA unless they have some amazing gaming coming out on the platform.
And unfortunately, it's all Jelly Bean based. And there are other products that are going to have similar graphics performance as NVIDIA's thing. And so, yeah, I wonder. Yeah, I just kind of scratch my head. I mean, just because you can do something, should you do something, especially in a market that is so competitive, so cutthroat, and so many other products out there? I mean, would you rather, you know, just have a cell phone this big or carry it around a big old controller? Like, you know, it's the original Xbox controller, that massive thing that some kids couldn't even use.
Yeah, I just look at it and I'm not seeing a lot of win. I'm seeing a lot of potential fail there. But, you know, I also might just
The market will let us know.
On a more cheerful note, the Bipower Revolt R770 Mini ITX gaming PC is as small as it looks. I am really excited about everything that's coming out of Mini ITX. I am a fan of the form factor. I am a fan of small PCs. And I got to say, this thing was looking really, really shiny, at least from a distance, while Ryan was talking about it. iBuyPower is a manufacturer. The one they looked at, an i7-3770K CPU, kind of the go-to for high-end gaming. Z77 Mini ITX motherboard, custom-built apparently, an NZXT CPU water cooler, a GeForce GTX 670 GPU, 8 gigs of DDR3, an Intel 320 SSD. And I was laughing. You know, it's kind of funny because it looks so small in the pictures until you see Ryan next to it. And you realize it's not quite as small as you think it is.
Yeah. It's gotta be at least the size of an Xbox 360, if not a little larger.
And it's kinda, you know, are you a big fan of cases and windows or windows with cases with windows in
with
the
windows?
Side? Or, yeah. Are you over that?
I'm kind of agnostic about it. Well, I guess that is pretty, look at the size of that thing. Look at that ginger. I didn't know they made gingers that big. No. You know, at first I was excited about it because originally the case guys were modding their own things to have windows. And then, you know, a handful of manufacturers decided to do it themselves. Now everything has a window. And, you know, I have one on my Corsair 650D. And the window is right up against the desk. So I can't see jack all anyway. It's a sharp looking kind of industrial design case. The contrast, the black and the white, the way all the vents are put in there, and it is a sharp looking machine. And I understand the excitement about Mini ITX just because motherboards and CPUs now integrate so many functions, which used to be standalone cards 10 years ago. And now everything is pretty high quality coming off there. Audio is not fantastic, but it's certainly better than it was 10 years ago. Video, even the integrated stuff from Intel's pretty decent. If there was an Achilles heel of this particular implementation, it's when you open it up and see the rat's nest of wiring, as well as listen to that little 40-millimeter fan and the power supply.
Smaller fans, higher whines, and somehow they're always louder because they're spinning faster. Yeah, I've My goal in life is to have, and I actually did once have an entire fan as the side of a case of a CPU spinning at half voltage. It was gloriously quiet. But at the time was gloriously quiet until I heard some of the stuff like Puget Systems is doing and some of the other high-end boutique manufacturers where you're just like, you want to start hitting the power button because you don't think the computer is actually on and it's just humming away at full voltage in the background. While we're talking about Windows and cases and mini ITX boards, this is a love it or hate it product if ever I've seen one. Leanne Lee's new mini ITX chassis has a curved shaped design and a front acrylic window, the PCQ30. Jeremy wrote this up for PC Purr.
That's, you know, if you live in a house like mine and you have two children, two dogs, two cats, a wife who, you know, crashes automobiles, all you're doing is showing off how much dust you can collect in there. Look at my dust collection. Only the finest particulates settle in this case.
My buddy Robert Harrod has he will no longer basically build a PC or own a PC that doesn't have filtering built into the case. And I got to say, there's a profound lack of filtering on all of the ventilation. There's three sides of ventilation, and absolutely no filtering. So I can imagine, yeah, we're a two cat, one dog, two small children house. It's pretty. If you want to put your mini ITX motherboard on your desktop and you're really good at laying out cables,
it'll be interesting to watch that. I'm kind of curious what the noise of that is, talking about noise in previous cases.
Right.
Liam usually makes some pretty good stuff, but this is certainly a love it or don't, and I don't particularly care for it.
Seagate's thin SSHD 500 gigabyte. We got the full review. We caught the announcements on this one. Alan Malventano, of course, wrote it up for PC Purr. Did he talk about this in the podcast last night?
He did.
And actually,
apparently, it works really well. It's the third generation of the combined hard drive and SSD, which they call SSHD, which is better than STD, which again goes back to the man thing we were talking about earlier. But anyway, performance is good, and the longer you use it, I think the better it starts figuring out what to cache and what not to.
Really? And then the animals exploded in
Miami. The animal exploded through my room.
So it's kind of funny. So hybrid hard drive, cache on the hard drive. And it's kind of funny because we've been playing around and we've been getting a bunch of questions on Texilla lately where they're like, you know, do I need more memory? Do I need a caching hard drive? You know, should I use ReadyBoost? Like ReadyBoost is dead, right? If you have an SSD, it's kind of useful if you have a regular hard drive and you don't have a lot of memory in your system. But it's funny. So Alan, seeing even if you have a whole bunch of memory in your system, you may still get a performance boost from the caching in the hard drive still.
Yes, because it is tightly meshed in there. They've got all kinds of programming algorithms to really see what you access a lot of. And I think it's only, was it 8 or 24 gigs? I can't remember offhand. I think it's 24 gigs for
24 sounds right.
Yeah, no, Alan, and so, you know, it's still plenty of space. And if you look at what I think Intel recommends, I mean, their implementation that they had for a long time was about 20 gigs in size.
Right.
And so we're sitting around there. But if you kind of see the programs that you use all the time, I mean, a good chunk of them are going to stay in there. I mean, if you're not going to be gaming off of it, obviously,
right.
You're going to be streaming textures from your hard drive. But, you know, Microsoft Word, all of your Internet Explorer, well, if you use Internet Explorer, Chrome, Firefox, whatever, all that stuff that you use constantly is just going to be popping up. So overall performance, it tested out very well in his benchmark suite. Not as good as, you know, obviously a fast SSD like the Samsung 840 Pro. But it is significantly less expensive. It's spinning Rust. Right. And when you're looking at I think the cheapest 500 gig SSD is about $330. It's a nice little savings you're getting for, you know, just as much space and almost as much speed.
Or even more. Yeah, I always love looking at the cached versus uncached boot times. Memento 7200 for uncached, like 37 seconds. OCC Revo, 23 seconds. Momentus XTG 1, 20 seconds. Momentus XTG 2, 15 seconds. And the Seagate SSHD 500 gigabytes coming in there at under 15 seconds, maybe like 12 and a half seconds. I just love fast stuff. And yeah, I absolutely agree. The pricing on that, it's actually tempting if you can fit one of these in your notebook, and you should be able to at this point. $120 for a 1 terabyte laptop drive that theoretically gives SSD-like performance for most real-world usage. That is a win, people. And that is available now. How cool is that?
Yeah, and what exactly? Let me look at the exact price. 500 gig, $140.
There we go.
Wait, is that correct? Yep.
Yeah, and they all... Yeah, I say the older, I guess the older solid state drive, the ST1000 is selling for $120. Is that right? It is.
Wait, up on what is it?
This is crazy talk. The laptop thin one is $100.
Yeah, the thin. 1 terabyte. Wow, $120. That's cheap. Cheap.
Yeah, and a 500 gigabyte, the thin 500 gigabyte is $99.
Nice.
7mm design. That's crazy. 9.5mm for the 1 terabyte. Oh, my goodness. Got an interesting question from the chat room at Robert Allen. Do you think – at Robert Allen, the chat room, not Twitter. Robert Allen in the chat room says, do you guys think Ouya, Shield, and Steambox will start igniting more PC game developing? No, because the Ouya and Shield are both running Android. Steambox. Do you think the Steambox is ever going to ship?
I have no idea. Maybe it'll ship when, Half-Life 2 Episode 3 comes out. Yeah, Valve is pretty horrific at doing these things. But, you know, you, at least you look at them and you think, after we see their product, maybe they were right in not releasing it in a timely manner. They don't ever do things by halves. And, you know, possibly that's a positive. But... you know, I don't understand the – well, I understand the importance of a Steam box because you've got common hardware, easy to program for, and you know it's going to be stable and work correctly right out of the box. But the pricing for some of these, you know, like that piston that was what, 900 and some odd bucks for parts that you could do for 400. But
it was a little cube thingy.
It was a cube thingy.
Two and a half.
Yeah. But I think that PC gaming right now is really popular just because the age of consoles, we're about ready to go into new ones here very, very shortly, obviously. But, you know, you can get so much better performance, really neat visuals. Both AMD and NVIDIA have, embraced things like, I've got three monitors sitting in front of me, which is why I'm just basking in this pale white glow. And, happily they don't put out a whole lot of heat. But, you know, Eyefinity and Surround Gaming, those are visceral, neat things to have, even though there are issues with the implementations from both guys. It's still, you know, I was playing Dirt 3 the other night, and it was like I was looking through a windshield, and it's wonderful. So, you know, I think PC gaming is as strong as it ever has been. You know, the movement we see in MMOs, while not as strong as when WoW was kind of at its peak, we still see new ones all the time. We've got Elder Scrolls Online that's going to be coming out later on this year. We've got Neverwinter, which is apparently a pretty popular one. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, PC gaming still has a lot of legs to it. And, you know, it may add to it, but I think any addition to gaming in general is going to be good. And as we're kind of moving towards maybe not so much like, you know, we're not going to have a single, you know, CPU architecture or any kind of overriding hardware support, but what like Sony is doing, what Microsoft is doing, they're creating software tools to port over these titles a whole lot easier than it used to be. Anybody who's programmed for a PlayStation 2 knows what frustration is, and PlayStation 3 wasn't a whole lot better. John Carmack probably liked it just because, you know, he's a command line kind of guy, and you know, he just thinks that way. But you know, the majority of developers out there, I mean, it was hard and troublesome. And when Microsoft came out with the original Xbox and delivered a pretty robust set of tools for it, I think it changed a lot of minds. And you know, they know that this is the future. If we can create the software to port over these good titles to our product, you know, it's going to help us in the end. So I think it's, you know, gaming is only going to grow as we get more and more powerful products, especially in handhelds.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think if anything, the Ouya and the Shield are trying to do more with basically the Android platform and stimulate more gaming on Android as an alternative to PC gaming or the consoles. And I think it's going to be a really, really tough climb, especially with the Ouya's kind of Kickstarter release, where it was slightly frustrating to use, and you know, it'll be interesting to see where that goes to. I will say the Ouya is a fantastic XBMC box if you have a compatible video collection. We've been playing around with that. So PCPer.com, anything exciting you can reveal coming up this week, Josh?
We're gonna have a, you know, kind of the last of these Z77 motherboard reviews. I'm going to try to get a CPU review out, but a lot of the interesting things are going to be at the end of the month and the first week of June. I think Ryan's got something coming up about a week from now, but I'm not entirely sure. The one thing that is interesting, and I'm glad that they popped it up, is we're in the last, 24 hours of our Indiegogo, 29 hours. Ryan is trying to raise 20 grand to redo an entire studio, get new cameras, new electronics to make our streaming a whole lot better than what we have now. Just because with the set design that they're working on, you won't have to really change a lot of cameras around, a lot of the equipment. And so he's hoping to put out a lot more videos than what we've been able to do so far. And he's even promised one time to, you know, possibly fly me out there after all this is done, and I can sit and, you know, demean him to his face and degrade his entire studio in person. But we've got 29 hours left. We appreciate all the support that we've gotten. It's been pretty amazing. You know, I think we reached 10,000 the first week. We're what, $750 away from the extended, and anything over the extended, you know, again, it's going to be going back into the production materials that we're using to produce the videos that people have grown to love. From our favorite red-headed, pale, tall, strange, gawky-looking guy, who I call the boss. Look at that! And why he is such a Kentucky fan? Everything in his life is blue. Blue does not always go with red.
I tread lightly around basketball with him because it's just so easy to make him weep. I will say I was shocked of all the Indiegogo options for this that no one actually signed up for the $200 signed legacy hardware option.
I know.
People spending $300 to join the podcast, $300 for the office tour and lunch. But I was surprised nobody wanted dead hardware autographed.
Well, we added that about a week ago. And there have been a couple of people who have, you know, added another $100 to their gold list to get products, but it doesn't show up that way in the Indiegogo. I mean, it's kind of basically they told us, hey, here's another $100. I want this. And I'm going to get out my Sharpie, and I'm going to give it to him.
Oh, my goodness.
In the most lovingly way possible. Yes.
So many places I'm now going with visions of libertarian happiness and staplers in Wyoming.
Yes.
It's a beautiful thing. Maker Faire. We're going to be all over it this weekend on Techzilla. I'm excited. I love making things in Maker Faire. I've always found something unbelievably cool at Maker Faire. We may see the first sub-$300 3D printer at Maker Faire this weekend. So I am on a hunt to see if I can A, find it, and B, abscond with one, even if I have to pay $300 for it. Do not tell my wife I said that.
I shan't say a word.
It's money. It's supposed to be going towards things like, you know, fixing the house and running electricity to the garage so I can podcast in peace. I'm going to call it. That's about it for this edition of This Week in Computer Hardware. Twitch, TWICH at twit.tv is the email address. if you want to send us an email. We'll get some more of the emails in next week. There's just a lot of news going on. And I was just really, you know, I got to interview the man a couple times. Paolo Delini's retirement this week, kind of, I just knew it was coming, just had no idea it was going to be today.
It's kind of amazing to think that he has been there for 8 years as CEO. It does not seem that long ago that he first stepped up.
And 40 years as an Intel employee. Intel's only 45 years old. He's been there for 40 years.
So is he like an intern taking out the trash initially?
I think he started as a young engineer back in the day. I'm also kind of like, wow, 40 years in one company. How nice would that be?
Well, if you're getting the paycheck he is, then it would be pretty darn nice.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, he's, you know, dude's earned his retirement.
Yes.
Mr. Josh Walray, thank you so much for joining us on Twitch this week.
Well, thanks for having me and putting up with my foolishness.
Oh, dude.
And the cats running willy-nilly throughout our offices.
Yeah, I can't believe the cat got into a fight outside during the middle of the podcast. Yet another professional height for me to hope to not exceed in the future. I want to thank the chat room for joining into their mayhem. Is the garage attached or outstanding in the backyard? Caffeine-free, Dave. It is going to be about $3,000 worth of wiring to get to the garage from the house because I'm going to be rocking enough amperage to TIG weld without burning the place down. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for Twitch. TWICH at twit.tv. twit.tv/Twitch if you want to find our older podcasts or get all the information to subscribe. Thanks to Josh, ladies and gentlemen. Ryan is probably out of LAX by now, and if not, he probably is really weeping. So if you're in LAX,
better be getting wined and dined. Better.
I hope he's wined and dined. Yeah. Because there's nothing worse than being stuck in LAX and trying to get out. Ask me how I know. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this edition of Twitch. I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Josh Walrath.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.